It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for joining me this morning. I hope you enjoy the show as we, next week, will roll into April and turkey seasons and all kinds of things happen in the upper Midwest. And I wanted just quickly to close the loop on something I talked about last week because I received several comments, and that was over feral cats and what Australia is doing to try to dramatically reduce the impact of feral cats on bird populations and small mammals, which have been raising havoc in Australia. And also, I commented last week about the impact of feral cats here in the United States and the estimation of how many birds they kill each year, which is astounding. And Cornell Ornithological, that's a hard word to say this hour of the morning, lab last year said that we've lost about 3 billion birds in the last 50 years on the continent. And they didn't talk about the causes so much, but I do want to say, just to close the loop, but at some point I know we'll talk about this again, but my position on cats is very clear. I love cats. I grew up with cats. House cats. Cats need to be kept in the house. Once a cat is allowed to go roam the countryside, it is the single most efficient predator that there is. And so we all have a responsibility, and we had cats when our kids were growing up. We don't have cats now. But we all have a responsibility. If we have a cat, to keep it in the house. That is what a responsible pet owner does. A dog owner doesn't let his dog out and just let it wander around for the day and hopes that it comes back. Dogs wouldn't be preying on birds. But we know that cats are tremendously effective predators, the number one predator there is. And we know that there are tens of millions of cats that have gotten away from the house and become feral. And we also know there are millions and millions and millions of individuals who own house cats who think it's great to let Kitty go out and just run around the neighborhood and come back. And that's the problem. We all have a responsibility. If we have a house cat, it's a house cat. We cannot let it marade around the countryside on your backyard. It is one of the reasons why we are having such a decline in bird populations. So moving on from that subject, I just wanted to be clear. House cats are great. They belong in houses. Nebraska and South Dakota are doing something that has caught the attention of a lot of people, and it's not been generally positive attention. They are going to have an experimental season, and they call it the three-splash duck limit option. So forever. We have had, well, not forever, after the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, we instituted a 25-duck-a-day limit, and there were no species limits, just 25 ducks a day. But for all of our lifetime, anyone who's hunting today's lifetime, we have had a limit based upon species and sex. You can shoot so many mallards, so many can be hens. You can shoot so many pintail, so many can be hens, etc. Nebraska and South Dakota have decided that they would like to institute a limit that says shoot three ducks and you're finished for the day. Doesn't matter what species they are, doesn't matter what sex they are, three ducks and you're finished. And this would be half of the ordinary limit. And their reason for doing this is because they feel that new waterfowlers, as they quote, say, are unsure of their duck identification skills And the three splash limit is a measure waterfowl managers hope will encourage more people to start hunting ducks. I haven't talked to a duck hunter who thinks this is a good idea at all. And I think for those of you who've listened to my show for a long time, you know that I know a fair number of duck hunters. And many of you I know are listeners. So what we're doing is diminishing the skill set and saying, it doesn't matter, just go out and shoot, because you haven't taken the time to learn to identify ducks. You don't go pheasant hunting and say, just go out and shoot. You know, shoot three pheasants and stop. Doesn't matter. No, you cannot shoot a hen pheasant. We don't go out and say, just shoot on turkeys. Just go ahead and shoot. No, we don't shoot hen turkeys. And most people don't shoot jakes, which are yearlings. But for some reason, waterfowl managers think that it's a good idea to say, let's just have a three splash limit and you're finished. That's what you choose to do. You can buy a license. It'll be a separate license. It'll be a tier one license. Actually, tier one will be the traditional option. Tier two will be the three splash limit. The irony of this, if there is any, is that in Nebraska, I think something like 90% of the ducks shot in Nebraska are mallards. How difficult is it then for a new hunter to learn to identify the difference between a male and a female mallard? Because their chances of encountering another duck are very slim. And that's true of South Dakota too. So these two states are offering this in states where there really isn't a great variety. It takes away the notion that to go hunting, you need to respect the resource. And to respect the resource, you need to be able to have some duck identification skills or be with somebody who does. I take tons of people hunting. Every year I take people hunting, and over the course of my lifetime, it's hundreds and hundreds of people hunting. And I identify birds if they can't. I feel that's part of my responsibility to them and to the resource. So why would we cheapen that and say, first of all, an inexperienced hunter is not likely to go out alone. They're likely to go with someone who's more experienced. Someone in the hunting party will likely have pretty good duck identification skills. It's part of the whole culture of hunting. You don't just go out and shoot a deer because it's a deer. No, you know the difference between a buck and a doe or a whitetail and a mule deer. So it may be harder with ducks. There are more of them. They're different species, different colors. Sex sometimes is hard to tell. But I would offer that if we want to cheapen the hunting experience and not respect the beauty of hunting and the importance of learning how to become a skilled hunter, then every state ought to just adopt a splash limit. If it hits the ground or hits the water, it's a duck. Doesn't matter what it is. That would certainly be sending the wrong message. And for the well over 1 million of us who hunt ducks in America every year, who take time to try to identify our birds, and more importantly, we take pride in trying to identify our birds, it would cheapen this whole experience, and I think give those who don't feel that hunters are worthy conservationists just one more arrow in their quiver, if you will, to say they don't even take the time. Duck hunters don't even take the time to learn what they're shooting. They just shoot and take them home. Bad deal. So I hope that South Dakota and Nebraska, they're doing it this year. First of all, I hope nobody buys this license. But if they do, I hope South Dakota and North Dakota quickly realize it's actually not positive for conservation. It's negative for conservation. So many of us try to never shoot a hen, and yet if somebody in South and North or South Dakota or Nebraska is out under this scenario, they could shoot three hens in the morning, every morning, because they don't have to identify birds. That's not what this is all about. I'll be back in just a moment with much more in the great outdoors, and when I do, I want to talk a little bit about a pretty interesting subject that is working its way around, and that is the subject of harvest of trees and how important it is to manage our forests. And I also want to talk a little bit about this idea that sheep could be used to help fight wildfires in California. Very interesting. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you for joining me this morning. I want to talk for a minute about timber harvest. And there was an article not that long ago in the Wall Street Journal, and now it's being written about pretty widely, that the cost of lumber, if you go to buy a 2x4 or something, or if you're working on building a house, you probably fell over when you found out how much that piece of lumber cost. And it's probably so new that it's still dripping with sap. But the price of timber has collapsed because there's too much of it. Soft timber in particular, softwoods. So what happened in the southeast primarily, because that's where most of the softwoods are, the pines and trees like that, was in 1985, we began the Conservation Reserve Program, and millions of acres were taken out of production in the south and planted to pine forests and softwoods for pulp. And as those trees matured, everybody said, well, it's like an annuity. They're going to grow. When they grow to the point where they need to be harvested, we'll harvest them, and it'll be a nice cash income on an ongoing forestry management, because every year you'll cut a certain number of trees. So millions of acres went into trees between about 1985 and 2000. Well, now it's time to begin, not clear cutting, but it's time to begin managing these forests and cutting the most mature trees, and this will go on for years. The problem is, even though there's incredible demand for housing and fixing things up, there is a vast oversupply of softwoods in the south. And so the price of on-the-stump timber is about as low as it's been in any of our lifetime. And so this idea that forest management would provide an annuity has turned out to be not true at all. There's a vast oversupply. And yet, on the hardwood front, there is not enough hardwood, and the price of hardwoods, which are oaks and walnuts and trees like that, hickory, and there's not enough of that. So when it comes to timber management, a lot of us have been thinking about how the Biden administration is going to handle the management of our national forests. And there's a great fear that there will be a significant reduction in the management of our national forests for timber at a time when we really need to manage our national forests so that we have the opportunity to have sustainable forests going forward. And what has to happen in the South now, even though the price of trees is terrible, these trees need to be cut. And also one thing that happened is over the past 30 years, there are a lot less newspapers in business, so therefore there's a lot less demand for the cheapest product, pulp paper. And the result of that is we don't have that demand there either. But if we are going to have healthy forests in the South, as these trees mature, which they are doing, they need to be harvested. Otherwise, we're going to have incredible forest fires in the South as trees age and die. And the same is true in the West. We talk about this a lot because it affects all of us. We need the Biden administration to have a very aggressive forest management program for the sustainability of forests and not to revert back to a management program which says we don't cut trees. They just die naturally. If we do that, we're going to continue to have an inferno across the West, and soon we're going to have an inferno across the South. So it's a very interesting subject. Wildlife, by the way, I think all of us know, benefit from timber management. Opening up the forest floor enables the next generation of trees to grow. And not only that, it enables grasses to grow until the trees provide a canopy. So as before the canopy closes in, as we open it up and grasses grow and all kinds of flowers, and that enables species that live in forest to thrive. And that's particularly true of rough grouse, which need the ability for forest management to create openings, as we know across the upper Midwest. So forest management is really important. Let's hope the Biden administration takes a very aggressive role in managing our forests. Otherwise, we're going to have increasing infernos across the West and now in the Southeast, which is private timber management. But if we stop managing our forests aggressively, we have real problems. I promised you I'd talk about sheep and sheep in wildfires. So in California, they are working on a project to see if contract grazing of sheep in a regenerative grazing fashion can reduce wildfires. It's quite possible that one of the things that California could do to reduce its wildfires, its grass fires in particular, is to bring back sheep grazing, which the environmental crowd in California pretty much ended quite a while ago because they didn't think sheep were good for the landscape. Well, now they know that their houses burned down in these intense wildfires and the smoke is terrible and it blows across the entire country. So there's a study taking place to see if, in fact, sheep grazing on a sustainable basis can really knock down the impact of these grass fires. Intuitively, you think it makes sense, but we don't have the data that we need to turn governmental policy around, much less the policy of the state of California. So we're going to talk more about this in the coming years, I think. But if it proves that sheep grazing can be a great deterrent for fires, then it's possible that California could become quite big in the sheep business again, where the environmentalists virtually ran them out of the state. So we'll follow that. Next week, I hope you come back to learn much more about the great outdoors and to join me on whatever the topics of the day might be that develop over the week. Thanks so much for being with me. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.
Sounds good. I will edit that together so we don't lose you in the middle there.
Yeah, and you might, I don't quite know where I went, but I may have said the same thing twice because I didn't quite know where I went off. You'll have to maybe look at that.
I'll give it a peek. I'll make sure it all looks good before I post it.
Okay. Thank you, and I hope my time is somewhat close, but I probably lost it.
We're probably right around where we need to be. You wrapped up fairly quick, so we're good.
So I'm good next Wednesday?
Next Wednesday. Give me one
at
second.
At 7:30 your time? I'm good.
Give me one sec. 7:30. Next Wednesday is the 31st. Yeah, 7:30 works.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks a lot.
I'll talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.